This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767 or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
With rumors of an impending extension swirling around the White Sox and Yoan Moncada, how important is it for both sides to get something done? And can contract momentum carry into a sports season?
Yeah, saw that yesterday. James Fox from FutureSox.com was the first one to report it, that that there could be a six-year extension in the works. And I saw some other less credible tweets about the numbers and the length and all that stuff. But, you know, look, it seems like a no-brainer for the front office to really try to get something like this done. It is a huge benefit for them to have these guys under contract. They've been working hard at extending people, and to have all of your young stars under contract is a big deal. Can you have momentum? I think the White Sox have momentum. I think they have a real feel good going on in the clubhouse from all accounts, and I think that that everybody is feeling pretty good about the future. I think that's a great thing to have guys knowing they have cost certainty for the organization, but it's also the players are buying out their arbitration years, and the Sox are being very aggressive about that and trying to get all their young stars under contract. During the game yesterday, there was a Stoney mentioned that Eloy gets up every morning at 4:50 a.m. and tries to get to the park by 5:15 or 5:20, and he does that because Abreu does that. And Stoney talked to him about it, and now Jason, I don't know if it was a joke or not, but he said Abreu makes him do it. But it was interesting to hear Stoney say that Eloy says that Louis Robert's now going to do that too.
Yeah.
They're all going to be doing this.
Right.
Now, you know, that is the sort of thing that you want out of your team, to have young guys that are following the lead of a veteran player. He's under contract. They're under contract. They know they're going to be together, and they're going to work hard at it. I'm all for it. I think it's a great way of going about doing business. I know a lot of people wonder how you give guys contracts before they get it all done. Well, that's how you get your cost certainty, and that's how you get a better deal.
You pay for focus, and you pay to kind of keep these minds uncluttered, and it does matter in pro sports. I mean, I think we're just seeing an example of this with the Blackhawks. Robin Leonard is traded, and in the last 2 weeks were, I think he admitted that he lacked focus because of the contract extension was weighing on his mind. We see it all the time in pro sports. So this is an organizational philosophy, and good for Rick Hahn. This is locking these guys up, whether it's now it looks like it's going to be Yoan Moncada, but it was before that Eloy Jimenez, Luis Robert, Aaron Bummer this past week. You pay $16 million for a reliever who's had really one good year. You're investing and you're trying to protect this core for the long term. Jose Abreu also did this. This is looking toward a six-year probably extension. This could be the White Sox first nine-figure contract that they write, and that's a big commitment. But you also got a player who was a 5.7 WAR player last year. He's a very big piece of this future. He's a very big part of the present. So right now, he still would be he's got four more years, but you're paying for the freedom of his approach, and he would right now be a 2024, I think he'd hit free agency. So you're locking him up, you're securing the future, and you're rewarding his commitment and his breakthrough season last year. So this is a good thing, and it fits perfectly with the way the Sox do business.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see this get done sooner rather than later. You never want to let a guy's contract get a little bit too close where he starts to maybe think about other places, starts to hear whispers from his agent, from other, you know, guys around the league that he talks to, whomever else is in his ear. If those months and the years start to trickle down the contract, then there's going to be distractions, perhaps, like you brought up there, David. I mean, and it's not as easy as it sounds, maybe, to keep that focus when you're thinking about, oh, where am I going to play this year, or who's going to give me this big money, and what am I going to do in 2023 or whatever else. So I think it's great. He's clearly, if not the best offense, I mean, he was definitely the best player on the team last year. Going forward, it's one of the cool things about where the White Sox are right now. It could be Moncada again. It could be Aloy. It could be Louis Robert. I mean, Tim Anderson, Grandal. There's so many different options and so many talented offensive players on this team for 2020 that you don't know who the best of the bunch is going to be. But at this time, I would say it is Moncada. And I would say that, David, you're also right on about it probably having to be a $100 million contract, if not more. You look at what Houston gave Alex Bregman a couple years ago, 6 years, $100 million. Moncada's not quite up to that level yet, but if he puts up another season or if he gets off to a hot start the way he did last year, it's definitely going to be in that ballpark. So sooner rather than later, get it done, get him signed up. Get all these guys signed up long-term. The window, it is open.
Getting this deal done is important. David, as you point out, sure, there are 4 years until he hits free agency, sure. But, I mean, this guy established himself as one of the best third basemen in the game last season. I think if you are the White Sox, you reward that man for that kind of season. I mean, that's what you should do. So I think it would be great if they can get this thing done sooner rather than later. I agree with Kevin. He deserves it. He deserves it for having the turnaround season that he had. And James Fox was the guy that reported the contract extension for Luis Robert. So hopefully this also happens, because that happened a couple days after he reported it.
I get why it's important for the White Sox, but why should he rush into this? I mean, bet on yourself, right? I mean, if everybody's happy, then great, fine. I mean, I think it's a nice gesture by the Sox. I get why the Sox are doing it. Makes all this. I'm not saying that they're being cheap or anything like that. I mean, they're going to have to offer him a lot of money. I didn't see any figures, but it's going to be a lot. But I don't know why this is a great move for Moncada.
Security.
He's got security.
Avoid injury. What you always won. Bad injury away from not having $100 million in your future.
But you're also like one more year of a great. If he duplicates last season and the team flirts with or is the wild card or is the champion of that division, then what's that contract worth, right? You get through one, bet on yourself for what the Sox aren't going to say, well, you know, we didn't get it done last year, so now we're not negotiating with you, right? So I see why the Sox are doing it. I don't know why Moncada would rush into it. But I love what Mully mentioned to start this off. I love the idea that Abreu is leading the way and these guys are getting in line and following. I think that's the kind of momentum that can really help a season. That's what I think is really positive about what's going on.
It's like the Chase Daniel of the White Sox. He's just leading from within the organization.
There's a lot of questions in there.
Where are we in trusting Yu Darvish before his third season as a Cub? Does his more relaxed off-the-field demeanor increase your level of confidence in him on the field?
I just think it reinforces the idea that this is a guy who has kind of cleared the obstacle that was in front of him his first year as a Cub, where it seemed like from the shoulders up was his biggest problem. No matter what his arm or his elbow was, you know, what problem was physically, mentally, he just didn't seem all there. And I think that something happened last year. He seemed to relax. Seemed to exhale, seemed to be more comfortable in his environment. But the more you see the guy, things like the Twitter jokes yesterday, and he's been tweeting all off season, and just his comfort zone on and off the mound, it does give you confidence, I think, if you're a Cub fan, that you're going to see the pitcher that you saw in the second half of last season, when after the All-Star break, in 13 starts, he had a 2.76 ERA. He went seven starts and 142 batters without walking anybody. And suddenly you look around baseball and you see the going rate for number one starters, and you don't think that the Cubs at 6-for-126 with Yu Darvish is a crazy price to pay if he can be that guy. So here we are, year three, and I think the trust factor is there with Yu Darvish, and I think he probably has earned the right to start an opening day, even though they don't have it announced it yet, even though he says he's kidded that he's not doing the math, he's not good at math, but I think that you can see why he has earned that, and I don't think anyone would be surprised if he is anointed the opening day starter for the Cubs.
Yeah, I think that he's a different guy. I mean, he's more comfortable in the uniform. He understands that what's expected of him. He's making jokes and he's speaking more English. He feels more comfortable doing that. I think I like everything about what we've seen from Yu Darvish, and I think there is a transition when you come into a team. And what I've really appreciated is he does have a very kind of a clever sense of humor. He is a really funny guy, and he doesn't mind kind of having a little bit of fun with it, especially when he's asked about something he doesn't want to talk about. The way that he handles that is really amusing. I think he's up for a big year. I really do. I think that he seems so comfortable in his surroundings. He's a different guy altogether.
I will say, as a person and as a Twitter comedian or whatever else, a big fan of the beat writers now, Yu Darvish apparently as well, I think he's great. He is a funny guy. He's very clever. He seems like a good dude. But how many starts did you say, David, last year? That he was excellent in the second half. How many starts was that altogether during his great run that he had?
13 after the All-Star break.
13 starts, yep, in two seasons with the,
yeah,
Cubs,
right,
where he was actually worthwhile, and he was excellent last year.
The Sox might give him an extension.
I don't want to don't tell Dustin. I don't want to diminish those 13 starts, but it is a relatively small sample size. And in 2018, his first year here, we can talk about, you know, his what was going on up in his head or how he was affected by the World Series. He only started 8 games that year because he had elbow surgery. He didn't have brain surgery. You know, he wasn't on the shrink's couch for the duration of the season. He was out with an elbow injury. He's had Tommy John before. He's got a history of arm problems. He's got a history of inconsistency, quite frankly. So I don't want to anoint him the number one starter, the best starter, the opening day starter, anything like that. I think if you're a Cubs fan, you're optimistic he can build off of what he did in the second half last year if he stays healthy. That's a big question mark to me. I would start Kyle Hendricks on opening day, just like I would have last year, like I would have the year before that. I think he is the best pitcher on this team. He's the most consistent. And I think he, having been here for, what, 4 or 5 seasons at this point, having done it all, has earned it more than anybody else.
My trust level in Yu Darvish right now is extremely high. I mean, he's healthy. The blister issue that surfaced, a while back, not even a factor right now. Last season was, that was a hell of a season for Darvish. It was really good to see him bounce back the way he did. He only had 7 walks in 81 and two-thirds innings after the All-Star break last season. And, the command is just working for him, as you saw last season. So I have all the confidence in the world in Yu Darvish. Does his more relaxed off-the-field demeanor increase your level of confidence in him? Yeah, definitely. I mean, he probably feels like he's been vindicated because of all of this Astros stuff that has come out. He's been trolling the hell out of the Astros on Twitter. I'm a fan. I love it. Go ahead, Yu Darvish. Have yourself a season.
Yeah, right this second, I can believe in Yu Darvish. Sure, he had a nice second half of the season.
Right,
I also
this
think
second.
The
you sound skeptical.
The Astros cheating scandal coming out, that might even be more weight off of his shoulders, right? We
sure
talked about he got a little bit better. Like this, the fact that he might have a little bit more giddy up in his step. I mean, truth, we'll find out. I will be shocked if he is the Cubs opening day starter. I think I know a lot of that is ceremonial, but I still think John Lester, especially with David Ross as the manager, will get that start. Now,
isn't that why David Ross should name somebody else the opening day starter?
Why does David Ross get in the damn dugout before he does anything else?
We can talk about that,
who
too.
Does Theo and Jed want to start?
I've never missed 3 days of work with the flu, and I'm not the manager of the Chicago Cubs. That's absolutely ridiculous. And they've got way better medicine than I get from the Elmhurst Clinic, okay? So, I mean, talk about dropping your drawers and getting a shot of whatever in your rear end. Let's go, David. Pick up the pace.
Wow. You're mad at a guy because he has the flu. Hey, we're going to talk to Brad Underwood a little bit later. Don't say anything.
If I miss 3 days of work with the flu, you would be trolling me like nobody's business.
That is incorrect.
That is so true.
I'm
sure you'd be clicking your heels if I wasn't here for three straight days. Yeah, you were here at the
I would
same time,
not
but
be.
That's a whole other story.
Trolling you in any fashion. Mm. Have I ever trolled him?
Ever? This week? Not yet. It's only Tuesday.
Today?
It's 5:40.
It's
5:40.
Early. Thank you for the question.
Should the Blackhawks have done better in their trade day deals? Are you surprised they didn't get more? And was not making deals an option, or were they forced to act?
Yeah, you know, man, that is just not enough. I'm sorry. I was expecting a first rounder for the goalie and a second rounder for the defenseman. I'm disappointed. I'm sorry. I am disappointed. And then, you know, they got three players, right? They got a backup goalie, and they got a defenseman who is not even in the top 10 prospects of the Vegas Knights, along with a second-round pick. And they got the first of the two third-round picks also for the defenseman. I got to tell you start adding this up and you look at it, and you got to wonder – if they really needed to make this move. I think, would they have been better off keeping Robin Lehner here and working on a contract extension for him and figuring out how to pay him and what to pay him? I'm disappointed that he's not going to be the guy moving forward. Now, maybe there is the secret whisper in place. I somehow doubt it. It seems like they tried to get a deal done. They were on different pages in terms of what that value was. And so you let him go, and now he's going to be back on the free agent market. And I suppose that's why you made these deals. But I'm disappointed with the return. I can't help it.
You woke up yesterday feeling, if you're a Blackhawks fan, you wanted more, and you wanted to have that first-round pick because you felt like Robin Lehner at times was the best player on the ice for you. And so you felt like, sure, you're going to get something like that in return. Gustafson, you thought, was going to bring you a bit more than a third-round draft pick. He went into this season, you wonder now if should they have traded him at the beginning of the year to get more when his value was higher, frankly, because he was coming off such a good offensive season. So when those things don't happen, Molly, I think that you just, it is deflating. And yesterday felt like a concession, and it was inevitable, and I think everybody understood what was going on, because I think I called it a mandate to move your assets. And you had to, because you're not going anywhere. But just that realization at 2 p.m. yesterday was sort of like the death of hope for the Blackhawks season. And it was officially put to bed. And now you're looking ahead to the future again. But how many times are you going to hear this rhetoric? And how many times are you going to be put in this situation? This is going to be the third straight season without a playoff appearance. When was the last time Stan Bowman won a trade? And I think that's when you start to look at this pattern and you look at the history and where this is headed, you start to wonder about accountability. And so yesterday brought all these things back to the surface. They should have gotten more for Robin Lehner, should have gotten more for Gustafson. And it just, you feel like a little empty.
Well, I know all about feeling empty, but I just don't think that you could put a ton on the Hawks and their return that they got yesterday. It's hard to kill Stan Bowman for these particular trades. You're right, David. He has been on a little bit of a losing streak in terms of some of the moves he's made over the past couple of years. But yesterday, I mean, when you're trading guys that are essentially rentals, I mean, you're not going to get back huge returns. These guys are both going to be out of contract at the end of the season. They're both good players. I mean, above average, certainly, and they're going to be useful for their new teams. There's a reason that they went out and got them. But again, they're not superstars. They don't have a ton of contractual control attached to them where you were going to be able to get a first-round pick back. I know that was what most Hawks fans were hoping for, just get a first-rounder at some point any way you can yesterday. They weren't able to do that, but they were able to move pieces that they probably weren't going to bring back anyway and get something back, as well as Slava Demin, the 19-year-old defenseman prospect who apparently was pretty well-regarded from the Knights organization. So I'm with you in the bigger view of Stan, how he hasn't been performing up to snuff, I guess you could say, over the past few years. But yesterday's return, I don't think it's I think it's a little harsh to kill him on that one.
In terms of Gustafson, I mean, the defenseman market was already a little bit saturated. There was movement that began last week with defenseman Alec Martinez getting a couple second-round picks from Vegas. So, I mean, that I wasn't too surprised, I suppose. But in terms of Leonard, yeah, I was hoping, like everyone else, at least a first-round pick, you know, maybe there is some sort of a secret deal like you're talking about, Mully, possibly, but it just seems like they chose Crawford over Leonard because Leonard was not going to, although there was a report that from Mark Lazarus that he was willing to take less years. I'm guessing that the money they couldn't come to terms on, and that's it. That's it. I don't believe Leonard's coming back, but I would hope he is. I mean, he's younger than Corey Crawford, and although Crawford kind of outplayed him in the last month or so, he's a hell of a goaltender, so I'd love to see him return.
He has been arguably their best player all year, okay? But he's also been their most talkative player all year. And then the day that I remember hearing the contract starts with the number 9 and it's like 4 or 5 years. And then he went out and had the game he had against the Rangers and then quickly threw his teammates under the bus, which he's been famous for all year long. I think all of that was enough to say, all right, get out. Now, the only problem with that is that if I knew that sitting on my couch, then everybody else in the league knew that as well. So the value shot down. If he had maybe kept his mouth shut, and if maybe the Blackhawks had guessed right and traded guys earlier to Ray's point, they also waited right up to the last. They didn't make a move until the last second, literally, the last minutes. Okay. So at that point, everybody knows the Blackhawks want to get rid of stuff. Everybody knows the Blackhawks are pretty much not yet mathematically, but are out of it.
They were hoping that Carolina was going to be desperate enough
absolutely
to give up more.
And they weren't desperate yeah enough. But again, that would have been a lucky break, David, right? I mean, that Carolina yeah was in that position. Right. You didn't know a week ago that Carolina was going to be in that position. So I think they may have waited just a little bit too long.
That's a crazy question. I ain't never been asked that one.
What did you think about Michael Jordan's eulogy of Kobe Bryant? Did it make you feel any different about Jordan?
Well, we talked about this in the open. I think that it did make you feel a little bit like maybe this was what he was waiting for, and maybe this was why he didn't speak in Chicago. And there are a lot of things that we can speculate about, but the thing that we do know for sure is that Michael Jordan delivered again, and you know, this time on a basketball floor in a very different setting. But so many people found strength in his vulnerability, and I think that was so powerful about what his message was and his relationship with Kobe Bryant. And boy, you know, to see him tear up and to continue just to let those tears flow throughout the 10 minutes. I mean, you know, it was like, I believe I can cry. You know, that was Michael Jordan yesterday. And it was something that everybody could relate to. Nobody will ever forget that moment because it humanized him in a way that we need to see Michael Jordan more often and more frequently. And you want to see more. You want to see him talk more. You want to see just more of MJ, the better. So yesterday, very moving, very, very emotional day for everybody.
I think I might have told this story before, but I remember covering the Jordan Bulls in the early days. And they were in the NBA Finals, and there was a practice at the at then Chicago Stadium. And the questions around Michael were all about, you know, a lot of people had gathered and they were asking all these questions about the socioeconomic impact of the Bulls in the area where they played and how, you know, the west side of Chicago was a significantly more ghetto-like area than the affluent places in Chicago. And sometimes people, the rich people that went in there only went in there for Bulls games. And Jordan's response to it was, he was talking about, oh, people know who I am. I drive through and I wave to them and they wave to me. And, you know, everybody knows who I am. And I get along with all the people in all parts of Chicago. Jordan didn't engage, had no interest in talking about whatever kind of leadership role people wanted to project on him. And he was interested in kind of getting control of his likeness and being a business person, in making money and in playing basketball and in competing and winning. And that seemed to be his lone focus. But I thought there were a lot of people from the outside looking in who were trying to tell Jordan, you can do a lot of good here. You can really help people a ton. You know, if after his father was murdered, Michael had gone into the West Side, stood up and said, hey, you know, I want the guns. Everyone bring the guns. We can stop this. The people project their vision of how someone should behave onto a guy that was as great a player as Michael Jordan. I don't think he ever was like that. I don't think he was ever, you know, a political. I don't think he was ever a guy that really was interested in doing that kind of heavy lifting. He was a basketball player. And I think that for whatever reason, there was this desire to have him be a leader of sorts. I think that still exists. And I think that people looked at the All-Star game being here and they said, hey, Michael Jordan played in Chicago. Why isn't he out there standing up for Chicago? Why isn't he front and center at that event and really get it? That's not who he is. It's not how he wants to live, and it's not what he wants to do. And he sort of sticks to his own code and does his own thing. And a lot of people seem to get upset about that. And I don't know that he was avoiding it being giving a speech in Chicago because he knew he was going to give one in L.A. and he wanted it to be more authentic. I think he just is not built that way. And he had a legitimate relationship with Kobe. He knew him from the time he was a kid, and I thought he spoke from the heart when he went there and did that, and he did it because of his friendship with Kobe Bryant, not because people had any expectation upon it. So I think it's really difficult to be Michael Jordan because I think there are expectations placed upon you that you're just not interested in.
You know, I was a little bit, I don't want to say surprised given the, you know, the context of everything, and he wasn't going to go out yesterday in the Staples Center and give, you know, a speech like he did at the Hall of Fame where he's, you know, trashing everybody and taking shots. Of course, it was going to be a heartfelt thing and he was going to be emotional about it. But I think the fact that, you know, you guys brought up a couple times that we don't really get to see or hear him that often. And when we do, you know, the guard or the mask or whatever you want to call it, he's usually a very guarded person and a protected person. And yesterday he was anything but. And, you know, I guess the close relationship that they had together that some people knew about, some people didn't know about, you know, a lot of people talked about the quote Mamba mentality that Kobe had. You know, Michael Jordan was like the prototype of that. You know, Kobe wanted to be Michael Jordan. He kind of crafted his own persona, his image, his work ethic off of everything that Michael had done before that. So it's not a surprise to me that they did get along and were so friendly with each other. So I don't really view Jordan any differently. You know, I've never met him. The guy was retired when I was still in high school. But, you know, it was a little bit surprising just to see him kind of unguarded like that, like I said.
Well, the eulogy of Kobe Bryant that he did yesterday was just, I mean, it was heartbreaking. It was touching. I mean, since Kobe Bryant's death, it's been revealed just how close Jordan and Kobe really were. He said, when Kobe Bryant died, a piece of me died. I mean, it was beautiful. It really was. And just to see another side of Michael Jordan, I was already always a fan since I was a kid of MJ, and just to see another side of him, I hate it had to be under the circumstances that it was, but it was certainly just touching to see a softer side of MJ.
I definitely was one of those people upset with Michael Jordan for not having a bigger presence in Chicago during All-Star Weekend. I thought it was just bad and just made me think that there really must be something even worse going on than we could assume between him and the Reinsdorfs, and that's why he didn't put his face out there. Or maybe he really couldn't handle it, because if he broke down and it was real and it was powerful and almost made me feel extra sad about this, if it wasn't sad enough as it is, then I can't imagine that he wouldn't have broken down at the United Center a week before, right? And he might have been saving this talk for that time instead of doing it at the United Center. So he delivered once again. He's the greatest of all time. And honestly, I feel, just, it's going to sound really weird, blessed to have, I mean, his career was like in the prime of my sports fandom, viewership, all of it. And it's just, I feel grateful that I had a chance to watch that and what he did yesterday. I'm a very anti-brand guy. Like, I don't wear logos. Like, I wanted to run out and buy a pair of Jordan brand shoes yesterday. Not that he needs my $100 or whatever Jordan shoes are. They're probably more than that. But, like, I felt like I wanted to have some type of connection to the Jordan brand yesterday after that. That was really, really good.
That's a crazy question. I ain't never been asked that one.
What do you want to hear today in Indianapolis at the NFL Scouting Combine for Bears general manager Ryan Pace and head coach Matt Nagy? Can they say anything that will make you feel better about this offseason for the Bears?
No. I don't think I'm going to feel better about it. Here's the unscathed truth. I don't think they're going to say anything that I actually believe. Okay? So I don't believe in what they're doing right now. I would be more interested in hearing from Nagy than from Pace, and I would be more interested in knowing what in his heart, how in his heart he feels about things, as opposed to what the public statements are going to be. These guys are keeping a low profile for a reason. They really can't say anything because it's been a train wreck, and they just need to get back on the field, and they need to get this offense fixed, Matt Nagy. But Ryan Pace, you know, you got to have an open mind and understand that if the quarterback's not working, you move on.
Well, I think what you want to hear today is something that you haven't heard all off season because you haven't heard from them. But I think that if they come out today with number one, yes, there will be competition at quarterback because there's an unusual number of veteran quarterbacks available we did not anticipate. And because there are, we're going to at least do our due diligence to see what's out there because Mitch Trubisky, after studying the tape, needs to be better. And our team is a good one, ready to compete for a playoff spot again. And we can do that in 2020, but we need to fix the quarterback position. That's our number one priority going into this offseason. We have determined that over the last 8 weeks of film study. That's what I'd like to hear from Ryan Pace, but I'm not very hopeful that we will hear that kind of transparency, that kind of accountability. Number two, I'd like to hear them talk about learning from the playoffs or learning from their own kind of self-analysis that they need to commit to running the football and they're going to structure their roster accordingly. Because last year when they were ready to do that, they didn't have a fullback. They didn't have enough tight ends. They didn't have a good enough scheme. So they're going to devote this offseason to becoming a power running football team. And then thirdly, if they want to include some news into the for the occasion, sign Allen Robinson to a contract extension. It's time. There's contract extensions are going around. It's that kind of time of year. So if they had that kind of news they want to break today, more power to them.
What I would like to hear is that the Chicago Bears have come to an agreement to release quarterback Mitchell Trubisky from his contract, so I never have to see him attempt to play the position ever again in this city. But they're not going to say that. They're not going to say that they're going to try to find another quarterback, that they're going to have a competition, that they're going to bring in somebody to push Mitch to, you know, make him better and have an open competition. They're not going to say anything like that. They're not going to say anything of substance at all. They're going to talk in circles around each other. It's going to be kind of an extension of the same stuff we heard after the season ended, where they're committed to Mitch Trubisky and they're committed to Matt Nagy, and it's all going to be the same thing that we've heard from then.
And then they go find a couple scapegoats.
Countless times, and then they fire a couple coaches after they speak.
The main topic I want to hear about, and the only thing that's truly going to make me feel better about the Bears, is if Ryan Pace goes up to the microphone and says, you know, the situation at quarterback is fluid, but I don't think that's going to happen, unfortunately. But they need to bring in some competition for Mitchell Trubisky.
Leonard Floyd will not be a member of the 2020 Bears.
Just opens up another hole.
I will take my victory lap.
That's all you want.
In your Nikes?
In your brand new
Jordan wear
Jordan
Nikes.
Brand.
Yeah, shoes.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. That's the 5 and 5. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Does your youth hockey team want to play in front of thousands of fans? Make it happen with Chicago Wolves Youth Hockey Program presented by Kia. Visit ChicagoWolves.com/youth hockey to learn more.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.